Welcome to a new episode of Software Gone Wild, a podcast in which we discuss real-life network programming and SDN solutions that make sense in networks that are smaller than Google or Facebook. I'm Ivan Pipelniak, and you might know me from my blog at ibispace.net. And I'm really glad to have with me today David G, who's a networking engineer that is heavily focused on programming his network. How are you today, David?
I'm very well, thank you, Ivan. I'm really well. So lots of interesting stuff going on at the moment. I'm feeling quite energetic and rejuvenated from a hectic few weeks.
Ah, that's great to hear. What are you doing these days?
So these days, I'm on a myriad of customer engagements across the country, from kind of small business through large enterprises. And in my own time, I'm researching a lot of technology quite heavily and attempting to blog about it on my blog.
As my listeners may not know you yet, do give us a bit of your history. So how did you get into networking? How did you get interested in network programmability?
Okay, so that question is an interesting one, and it goes back probably about 14 years or so. So I actually started off in life as an electronics engineer. We're working with embedded systems and writing embedded TCP/IP stacks and control systems for industrial machinery. And I found myself more concerned about how that information moved across a network that I eventually kind of moved away from the electronics into networking, did the Cisco CCNA as everybody else does, and then moved my way through all the kind of normal industry accreditations and aggressively moving through companies. So I've kind of moved from a data center space into online gaming, from that into the ISP work, some contracting work. I briefly ran my own hosting company, and I've landed now for a large kind of technology provider in the UK. So everything from data center through campus security, infrastructure security, and recently how to control all of that together and seamlessly has kind of brought me almost full swing around back into programmability and how to control forwarding planes. So it's a bit of a convoluted story, but very much the ends are beginning to come together again, how to control.
This sounds exactly like what I was doing maybe 10 years ago. So yeah, I can see some parallels.
it's interesting times at the moment. It's so rich and fertile in terms of technology that's out there. So it's a very exciting time to be in the industry. And I think networking technology is only going to get better and enrich, as opposed to, I think, diverse and split. I don't think we're going to see some of these splits again that people are predicting, maybe.
Oh, we will. Don't worry. The vendors will take care of that. So you're saying you got interested in network programmability because you're trying to automate, orchestrate all this stuff.
Absolutely, yes.
Is there anything that you can mention that you've already worked on? Like, we are trying to focus on real life instead of a theory. So is there something that you can tell us what the problem was and how you solved it with network programmability?
Absolutely. Everything for me certainly is about real life, and I try and avoid vaporware. So as much as I will go to vendor updates, very much my focus is what can I do today and how can I improve that, and maybe where is it going to go? Where are the next baby steps? So some of the big projects that I've worked on in the last kind of year or so, one has been an internal project around an internal cloud. So how we can tie together networking, so whether that's kind of physical elements and a bit of NFV into something like vCenter. Also trying to deliver services via kind of public facing web hosters has been another interesting one, which was kind of based on containers and Linux. To be honest, Ivan, a lot of this varies massively. You know, some of it has been scripting because the culture hasn't allowed us to build in any orchestration platforms. Some of it has been a case of building some templates and almost starting a mental journey off. But the biggest projects we've had have used off-the-shelf kind of components so far because there's been cultural resistances to that. But then what I'm trying to do in the background is trying to build a network of contacts from vendors. And let's say Juniper and Cisco have been key so far, and HP is another one where you try and take something like, what can we do today? How can we tie it into the tools that we have today, and how do we insert those into the cultures? So I think very much most of the work has been baby steps on beginning to tie up loose ends, as opposed to very futuristic, this is going to be brilliant and we're going to tie everything together with one click. We are trying to bridge those baby steps right now. And if we can automate something right now, it's better than nothing.
So effectively, you're doing what I'm always recommending people to do. Go for the low-hanging fruit.
Absolutely, yeah.
Solve something small that bothers everyone, but no one has ever worked on solving it.
Yeah, that's it. And if we can bring, or certainly if I can bring a bit of awareness at the same time, then it's a win-win situation. You know, it's about planting seeds, I think, right now. Nobody's got any definitive answers, you know, with news around dual vendor strategies and forklift upgrades. We're in a really kind of confusing space. So anything we can do right now to level the playing field in terms of providing some control, it's all adding to the future kind of vision and bringing all the loose ends together.
So you're not the guy who would bring in a massive new orchestration system or controller that would solve all the problems in this world. You're trying to work with existing gear and make that gear behave better or more orchestrated.
Absolutely. I mean, let's ask a question first. How many customer sites do you go onto that they say, right, okay, we've got £1 billion. Let's rip out everything and start again. How often does that happen? Right. Okay. So we all have that same problem where somebody might be running a 2950 switch somewhere and a Nexus in the same network and possibly on the same VLANs as well. And, you know, they might have a HP micro server doing some weird testing and then some Cisco UCS hanging off one side doing some other stuff. So it's in a kind of world of brownfield with many, many kind of discontiguous and many, many split endpoints and manual tasks, I think we try and make the best of what we can to deliver some points, to remove some pain, to allow the next step to happen and try and deliver some education as we go.
But on the other hand, as you're working with unique brownish snowflakes, every scripting solution you develop is unique to that customer, right?
It is and it isn't. So although maybe some of the content of the solution is unique, the actual methods are exactly the same. So it might be a case of let's create the idea of building templates. Let's create the idea of maybe get on a whiteboard. If you need to make a change, let's go from the beginning to the end of what you would do with a CLI. Let's take that information and let's turn it into pseudocode. And even if you don't go ahead right now and implement that, then what we end up with is a mental shift ready to pick a product up maybe further down the line. So I think the tools are very much the same. However, as you say, every network's different. So some of the content that goes into any solution, you know, it's always going to be different. And I think that's part of the fear. You know, there isn't a golden bullet right now. I think it's a set of tools that we need to build on.
So effectively, you're using like a toolbox of tools, and then you put them together and you provide the glue and the business logic and the user interface to that.
Yeah, those may vary. I mean, they're all building blocks. So, you know, somebody might have preferences and might want to use a Cisco product, or somebody might want to use a VMware product. Or, you know, you get some really experimental guys and they've made their own tools. I mean, that they're fairly rare. So even though the building blocks may change, the actual underlying methods remain the same.
So with this line of thinking, does that mean that every network engineer will eventually become a programmer?
Right. So having a conversation recently with Jeremy Shulman at Juniper, it's something he's wrote about. It's something I've wrote about. Now, the answer to that is no. But do I think, and certainly do other people think, that you will have to think like a programmer? I think the answer to that is yes. However, I've got a lot of experience now from going into customers and actually asking this question after I formed the relationship. And the first response to talking about networking, people becoming programmers is fear, the eyes, you know, the kind of eyes, loads of shine and a lot of looking at desks in panic. So I think in terms of being a programmer, well, you kind of already do it now. You look at the CLI, you could argue it's a form of very, very simple programming, and you can create a CLI script and a CLI template. So it's all kind of semantics at one level. However, will every guy be able to go out in 2 or 3 years, he runs a network, and write a web app? Probably not. Will they be able to write a run book or a playbook or a recipe or, you know, whatever the method is to create a template for an orchestration tool? Then most people will do that because it's a diagonal step of what they're doing now. You know, let's take a single vendor. We take a single vendor, they might have several operating systems. And if you have a myriad of these devices in a given enterprise, then you already know several languages. And it's almost we're going to try and take that set of thoughts, move it sideways, and introduce some intelligence. So things we get with programming, you know, we get an IDE, we get an environment to go off and run some code. We can also do some testing on the code itself, where the CLI gives us that direct feedback, unless it's a bug, in which case we've got bigger problems to worry about. With the likes of lots of kind of NFV coming out at the moment, we've got things to test off. So I think the journey is going to get easier, but we need to take some of the pain away about what actually thinking like a programmer is, and maybe not the end goal of saying we're going to become a programmer. I mean, reality is, like I say, right now you do the most dangerous job in the world of there's a CLI, and that can go horribly wrong and you can lock yourself out of a network. And at least with this kind of approach, we take away some of that pain and put in a safety net as well. I don't know if that kind of answers that particular question, Ivan.
Well, I think it does. Thank you for a slightly different perspective. We are amazingly aligned, but you put things in a different way, which I like.
Oh, okay.
So what would you say thinking like a programmer means?
That's a great question. And it's one I've been having internal battles with and debates out in the industry as well. So thinking like a programmer, if we can do some basic visualization right now. So we take, say, four switches and we connect them in a square. Not a very good topology, so don't shoot me down for that. But we connect them into a square. And we kind of connect some servers around the edge. So we've got some host ports and we've got some kind of network-to-network kind of interconnects. Well, instead of immediately jumping into the CLI and rolling out some commands to put some VLANs on and to put some storm control in and some basic kind of protection mechanisms, let's take that, let's jump onto a whiteboard, so let's throw some delay into the whole thinking process and put some disruption into the brain. Once we do that, we can write down, even if you write down the config, draw it out, write down some config around the edge, and let's build, and I can't do some air quotes right now, let's build some code. And then once you've put your basic, let's say a basic data set in right now, so your base objects, we then add some information on top of that. And then once we've done that, let's try and move an object or a packet through that whiteboarded out network. So what we're kind of doing right now is we're trying to visualize what the network constructs look like. And then if you get a whiteboard rubber and rub out the boxes, the switches that you've drawn, what you're left with is code. And once we've got that, then we actually think, well, you know what, we now know what the common steps are. We can put those into a template. And then once we've got them into a template, either you get into the habit of doing this more often, or you already, you know, we can find a tool that can go into. And it's that, I think, exercise is a first baby step towards thinking more like a programmer. Let's not worry about right now about around debugging or around testing with, you know, kind of fancy environments. Simple languages give the best results, so there's no worrying about compiling or, you know, kind of weird errors that maybe like a virtual machine can't handle or a runtime library is missing. It's really, we're in its infancy. And again, kind of going back to the Jeremy conversation, we were talking about the whole DevOps piece and the whole DevOps piece for the kind of admin teams and how we roll those applications out. It's taken years and years and years for teams to be more comfortable with this kind of approach. So none of this is going to be overnight. And from an educational point of view, something that I'm massively passionate about is being able to help people adjust into these mindsets, realizing what they're doing now is probably more difficult than where the world's going right now. And one question, which is a side question onto your first one, you know, me becoming a programmer, am I going to lose my job as a network guy? Well, I think your job as a network guy is going to get more complex. It's going to get more complicated. There's going to be high demands for these skills. And anybody who can come in and view something in code, a whole infrastructure, I think it's a very valuable skill set to have. And even it's going to be even more valuable the further we go down the line.
So effectively, what you're saying is don't jump onto the CLI, but think first.
Absolutely. Think first, break the task down, create a workflow. And then once we have some code on a board or some network config, let's say we've got a workflow that maps perfectly onto an automation platform. Okay, so there are different flavors out there, and some of these thoughts may need adjusting slightly, but it's more of a mental shift. So stop going onto the CLI, and even if you start templating things out and leaving blanks or variable names in, and what I mean by variable name is even if you call it a placeholder, so even if you put it in brackets, put X instead of a VLAN number, if that makes sense. I don't know if I can explain that any better.
Yeah, well, it does make sense to me.
Okay.
So effectively what you're saying is don't start typing in commands. Figure out what is it that you need to do to add a VLAN, for example.
Yes. And does this VLAN need to appear in several areas of the network? Well, if it does, what are the common links to doing that? You know, would it be putting it on an 802.1Q trunk? Would it be putting it on several host ports? If that's the case, then we can list out all of those steps. And some of those steps you may be able to turn into a loop. So if it's a set of host ports, it may be a case of get list of host ports and go through each host, add the VLAN on. Bit by bit, the more you think about even adding loops in, these ideas map into automation land beautifully.
Yeah, and you also standardize your configurations because you will add every host in the same way.
Absolutely, yeah. Even across different vendors. That's the beautiful thing about this. So by templating out, we could almost see it as a layer of abstraction, and there are some things under that layer which will kind of convert that from pseudocode or pseudo language into a, you know, kind of more vendor-specific language.
You just gave me some great ideas. Thank you.
No problem. If you make any money, I'm really happy to give you my PayPal address.
Okay, we can talk about that. So we've got as far as don't run into CLI, step back, document what is it that you're trying to do, document the transactions you want to perform, then for every transaction, write a template that does what you want it to do, and insert parameters where you think the parameters should go, and then put this into some tool. And what could that tool be?
So there are several tools out there right now. Ansible is a big one. So the ability to, let's say you draft on these templates in Ansible, would go off and execute that. Puppet is another one. In addition to those, there are engines out there as well, like there are the TailF NCS product. There's a Newton Networks NCX and another one which doesn't quite come to mind at the moment. Some of these engines allow you to put templates into them and execute on a network below. And what they will do is they will convert to SNMP or CLI or further API calls. And on top of that as well, there is an industry shift towards controllers. And we're not talking about OpenFlow controllers. And you could argue that TailF NCS and Newton Networks NCX are actually kind of network controllers. But there's also potential to pick up something like Open Daylight and do this as well. You could actually do it via a web call, which I think to kind of make the story more linear, if you take a controller will abstract, i.e. hide, some of the information required to be able to put the config in. So we take a Cisco IRIS box, we take a Junos box, we take a Arista, great, whatever. We put a controller above that, and then the controller knows how to talk to those elements independently. So then we can actually tell the controller what it needs to do. So let's maybe call the controller a translation box. So we can tell that translation box via a number of documented commands, really kind of function calls, but let's call them commands for the CLI friendly people out there, of add VLAN to X devices, add IP address to X interfaces. So tools like this take away, I think, some of the utter pain in trying to remember, 10 different CLI instances, or, who remembers SNMP OIDs, because I surely don't. Lots of weird APIs coming out at the moment where if some of these tools take care of that and you can download a widget or a plugin for these tools, a controller then becomes perfect, because what you end up becoming familiar with a controller driven or a tool driven or like a framework driven environment to go off and do some of the configuration on your behalf. So there's another conversation on top of that, which is an industry shift towards kind of policy driven configuration, and Cisco is certainly driving that one at the moment with OpFlex, and the idea being that you have a kind of common policy language on how to define your network and the behavior of the network. And OpFlex will take that information and will render it to network elements, either in the form of maybe PBR or OpenFlow, however it kind of manipulates the forwarding hardware. It will translate a policy, which means then you can have the same policy on several devices, and the network elements almost take care of themselves. Obviously, I appreciate that's quite a step away from being able to visualize code. But some of the first steps that people are beginning to take are picking up like Cisco OnePK or picking up Juniper's Pi EZ library. These tools allow you to almost do run-to-completion scripting in such as Python, or even run some Java code in C++. I mean, C++ for networking is a whole argument, why not to do that. But the idea being we can start today by experimenting with these tools in run-to-completion scripts, and once we're happy with how they work, kind of move up a level, allow the controller to do that on our behalf, and then let's try and, I think, minimize down to a set of languages that we need to understand as network guys. And whilst the CLI is not going to go away overnight, we've had it for years, it's not going to go away. There's always going to be an element of that there. Adding tool sets into how to drive that via a common engine is going to allow us to tie the network into the application teams instead of maybe a paradigm shift, which isn't going to happen. Well, personally, I don't think it's going to happen, where the network becomes central to everything, because the application teams typically are pretty much in control of an enterprise from an organizational point of view.
Yeah, well, you hit my sore spot there. Anyway, if I don't believe into making giant step like starting working with a controller, let's say I believe in what you told me about modularizing the configuration and making templates and then translating service definition into template for Cisco, Juniper, whoever.
Yeah.
So I have these code snippets and somehow I have to push them to my devices. So how can I do that today without throwing away everything I bought in the last 5 years?
Again, great question. There are, I think, two steps available right now, two I will be comfortable in talking to customers about. One of those will be to use a framework available. Ansible is a great place to start with that. But in terms of the ultimate baby step, I would start looking at toolkits and frameworks offered by those vendors. So you grab Cisco's OnePK, grab Juniper's Python EZ library, and look at what those can do to you. And whilst you could argue that actually, we've got a set of templates now and a set of configurations really kind of to be applied, the information is there anyway. So let's take one of those. Let's use a tool set provided by a vendor, and let's map on that onto that tool set and run it even maybe from a Linux server or from your Mac or from your Windows machine, God forbid it. But let's run those templates with vendor tools. And even if from day one, all you are doing is getting information out of those elements, so maybe take a host name, take the uptime, take a list of active interfaces and MAC addresses, from day one, it allows you to become more familiar with maybe how to create a loop of interfaces or how to extract information and store it in a persistent database or something like that. So I think as a day one step, maybe start looking at what's immediately available, which are the vendor tools. And the next step on from that will be to take a look at, say, Ansible or Chef or Puppet. But obviously, those have some constraints depending on the environment you're working on. I think right now, we need to be seeing baby step results and people not being burnt by propagating errors, which is a massive concern, I think, for all of us.
But wouldn't using the vendor frameworks or tools, as you just mentioned, lock you into that particular vendor?
Absolutely not. So if we take the ideas of trying to visualize things in code and then you, say, create your own set of templates, mapping those templates to a vendor provided framework. You can do that yourself. So if you go down and you go and buy some Huawei equipment and they provide something for you, it's a minor job to translate those kind of templates into that framework. Now, it's not a long-term solution. This is more of it's kind of like a brick in the road of a longer understanding and a wider understanding. So the best thing longer term will be to settle on a framework such as the tools I mentioned before to kind of I think keep it simple, allow you to repeat without having to build some kind of plumbing between what you see your code as and what the vendor frameworks are doing, but that the controllers will typically be able to talk to the vendor, different vendor devices anyway. But if we kind of go into a brownfield where they've been doing everything by CLI and we say, right, go and put a controller in, whilst you could argue it's kind of like a diagonal step onwards from a network management station, you know, some popular ones out there right now that are able to roll out configuration in APIs other than SNMP, you could always see the kind of feedback coming from the customers. So one of them is a concern. Why do I want to allow people to come along and make changes? I can't see the results of feedback loop, i.e. the information coming back from the element. It isn't great with this software. It's too much of, a mental shift for most organizations to stop doing something one way after years of having baked in procedures from the likes of ITIL, and there are service managers and many other people's jobs at risk as well. And none of this is going to change overnight. I'm going to say what by risk, I mean, these people maybe there weren't loads of jobs, but will the jobs change? I think there's going to be a lot of shift in order to allow us to have a more programmable network. The infrastructure we've got right now is all been built around CLI and manual changes, and the apps team themselves via the DevOps changes have gone and they've harnessed this pain and harnessed a change. Hence now we're, you know, being massively scrutinized for, well, you know, it takes you 3 days to add this VLAN in and our guys can do it in, you know, minutes. Yes, but it took you years to get to the, you know, to the time where you can make a change in minutes. And we've got to go through that same pain as well. It's a bit of a convoluted answer, Ivan. Sorry, I don't think there's an easy one at the moment.
No, but you just made a perfect point. So let's elaborate on that as my last question.
Okay.
How do you make people trust these things? So building configs from templates is great.
Yep.
And then everyone will go like, okay, now we have this. Now we will cut and paste them into the devices at the maintenance window. So how do you persuade the people that this is now safe, that this can be done at 10 a.m. on Wednesday?
Okay, so I think in order to answer that, let's take another question and say, let's ask, how come we're in a position now where we're happy to make a change by CLI? And I think the answer to that is most vendors have putting safety nets around the CLI. So, and you can't just go and type a random word in after a command, because what happens is the underlying operating system in error checks that value and might say, well, I haven't got VLAN ABC configured, error. So we're used to this feedback mechanism, this kind of loop of submit something and get results. So when we start looking at templates and templated config, what we need to be in the habit of doing is due diligence is always required regardless. But when we push a configuration out, always take a validation of what you've just pushed. So if I'm going to go and push out, I don't know, 5 VLANs for 10 hosts and, you know, across several trunks, once you push a configuration out, let's then take a dump of that configuration from the network, parse it, and then almost, what I mean by parse is kind of extrapolate the feedback from the returned objects and make a list of the changes as a report, maybe. This is, you know, kind of akin to doing a show run. So if you take a CLI journey, if you will, you put the VLANs in and you'll do a show run afterwards. You're doing maybe a show VLANs if you're talking about IOS and see where the VLANs are. Or even, you know, are we running spanning tree? Yes, we're running spanning tree. Right. Okay. Well, let's do a show spanning tree and let's have a look at what interfaces are forwarding and blocking and so on and so forth. Well, I think the whole ability to run templates, you can do exactly the same thing. So you can build your templates and you can, at the time of deployment, maybe don't even plumb in the values of the changes like the VLANs. Also, into your template, put in some basic validation steps. So if my return value is the same as the one I've put in, great, you know, green tick, we've done something well there. But again, due diligence is still one of those things I think we're always going to have to do, because if we have a very large enterprise network and they've got 3,000 VLANs running, you know, whether you do it by CLI or do you do it by code, using the same VLAN is bad, especially in environments like PCI, maybe you've got a payment server or something running, and then you go and drop a dev environment in there someone by accident. So then it comes down to asset management systems. But then the next baby step on from that is your template could actually reference the asset management system and say, right, we need new VLAN. Actually, is it in use? So query, say, an asset management or a network kind of resource management system, and then query the network as well, maybe before even the code goes in. So again, it's kind of emphasizing the earlier point of these templates and the kind of journey that you want to lay out on top of your, kind of render on top of your network. You need to be able to break down into steps and make sure the steps are logical. And sure, I think we're all going to go through some pain points. So there are going to be some bad times, some bad things done. I don't think they're going to be any worse than we've already done with the CLI. But again, it's going to be a learning curve. And bit by bit, the trust boundaries will shift of the teams around us, like the guys who run the ITIL teams and the InfoSec guys who are, you know, seriously concerned about compliance. Those guys have to kind of buy into this long term. And it's going to be a case of trust building and sharing and educating.
Fantastic. By the way, what you described before with the validation, it almost sounded like unit testing in code writing.
Yes, there are other arguments on top of that. I mean, you could use something called unit testing, which I'm kind of been having conversations with other people in the industry around on how we could do that. But the beautiful thing we have right now, Ivan, is we've got lots of appliances available to us as downloads and as VMs. So, you know, we want to roll out a network change across several switches. Well, you know what? Actually, most people these days have 16 gig on a laptop. We could roll up a couple of routers or some, you know, some kind of virtual switches and actually get our script or our application, which if you want to call it that, to actually call out to an asset management database and run the config and see what actually happens, just to be sure. So yes, I think that this is still going to be testing, hence application teams have dev environments, you know, that's never going to go away. But the ability to speed all of that up exists. And that's, I think, the real crux of things at the moment is things to take way too long to change. So if we can automate the testing, and if we can automate the deployment, and if we can automate checking the asset database, we've just took hours out of a change, maybe even days.
That's the perfect summary. So let's stop there for today.
Perfect.
And David, thanks for being with me. And could you tell people where they can find more about you and what your blog is and what you're doing on your blog and your Twitter handle and things like that?
That was a huge question. I'm not sure my memory's quite up to that, but I'll give it a go.
It is.
Okay. So you can find me at ipengineer.net. So that's my kind of independent blog where I write about a lot of these kind of ideas. And also I try out different vendor frameworks and systems. And you can catch me on Twitter at LSP42.
By the way, David's blog is how I found him, and this is why we have this talk today, because he described the baby steps that he was testing. So there's a long blog post on how 1PK works. There's a long blog post on how Python with Juniper works, and so on and so on. So if you're interested in programming your network, you should definitely go to his blog and read all those articles, and then you'll be able to start making those baby steps. So thank you, David, for doing that for us.
No problem.
And I'm Ivan Pipelniak, and you can find me at ipspace.net or follow me at iOSHints. And whatever we've been discussing today, you'll find the show notes at podcast.ipspace.net, where you can also find a subscribe link if you want to subscribe to this podcast feed. You need more about SDN, visit ipspace.net/SDN, and there you'll find links to SDN-related podcasts. Some of them are free because vendors were sponsoring them, as well as webinars, workshops, consulting services, anything you need to get your SDN project off the ground. And finally, if you like the show, do tell a friend, leave a review on iTunes, and follow us at podcast.ipspace.net.